This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother stone. You better learn your past, you better learn your own, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Jewish Crypsis, The Name Game. This is going to be about a simple yet potent aspect of Jewish identity and Jewish Crypsis. I've talked in the past about Gentleman's Agreement. I'm going to go back to that again. This film that was made in the late 1940s in the wake of World War II, and that the premise, the main character, changes from a white man into a Jew, and he does it by simply changing his name. And the one other thing he does is he tells people, I'm Jewish. And those two things are, that's the premise of the movie is based on that, it's that simple to become a Jew. Now, it's actually more complicated than that, but the reason I bring up this point is because what we're interested in here is the reverse, which is actually easier, which is that when Jews want to become white, all they have to really do is change their name and don't tell people that they're Jews. And as long as they don't look obviously Jewish and don't act obviously Jewish and don't tell anybody that they're Jewish, that's enough for them to pass in many cases. Whereas the reverse, when a white tries to pretend to be Jewish, there's all sorts of little details to Jewish identity that any good Jew, any real Jew, will be able to sniff you out pretty quickly that you're faking it, whereas the reverse is not as common, not as easy for whites to do. I'm going to hit a few. I have a lot of information here, and I'll just say that the program post for this installment will be long and have lots of information in it, and I urge you to go and read it. But that means in talking about it, I'm going to really try to hit a couple of the major themes and cite the things that I think make those points, support those points, but otherwise skim over them pretty quickly. So there's going to be a lot of information I'm going to talk about here. One of the most important points is that a name can be a reliable indication of Jewish identity. A name by itself, it can be a very reliable indication of Jewish identity. And that changing those names, and especially those identifiably Jewish names, that Jews are well known for doing this. As with other forms of crypsis, changing your name is an attempt to manipulate the opinions and perceptions of other people, the people around you who are going to see that name. It doesn't change who you are or how you think of yourself. It changes how other people think about you. That's the intent of changing the name. It's to pass, to deceive. It's a form of disguise or fraud. One of the sources I'd like to cite right off the bat here is The International Jew. It's chapter 70 gets into this topic and is titled, as it was originally printed in the Dearborn Independent in 1921. The title is The Gentle Art of Changing Jewish Names. Prior to and this goes into a little bit of detail, history of Jewish names. Where did these Jewish names come from, especially the ones that are identifiably Jewish, obviously Jewish? Prior to the 19th century, the Jews resident in Germany did not use family names. It was Joseph, the son of Jacob, Isaac ben Abraham, the son being designated as the son of his father. But the Napoleonic era, especially following upon the assembly of the Great Sanhedrin under Napoleon's command, caused a distinct change in Jewish customs in Europe. In 1808, Napoleon sent out a decree commanding all Jews to adopt family names. Before that, they didn't have family names in the sense that Europeans understand surnames. In Austria, a list of surnames was assigned to the Jews, and if a Jew was unable to choose, the state chose for him. The names were devised from precious stones, as Rubinstein, precious metals, such as Goldstein, Silberberg, plants, trees, and animals, such as Mandelbaum, Lilienthal, Oaks, Wolf, and Loa. The Jewish German Jews created surnames by the simple method of affixing the syllable son to the father's name, thus making Jacobson, Isaacson, while others adopted the names of the localities in which they lived. The point being here that Jewish names, Jewish surnames, are a relatively recent phenomena, recently taken, and that they're somewhat arbitrary, and although based on materialistic things, diamond is another one that wasn't mentioned here, but diamond, gold, silver, and stone, especially, you know, referring to precious gemstones, is a common theme in Jewish names, the identifiably Jewish names. Later in the article, it says, the Jewish habit of changing names is responsible for the immense camouflage that has concealed the true character of Russian events. And this gets into the harm of Jews disguising themselves as what they're not. And you can listen to the International Jew. In fact, it was a recent episode with Carolyn and Hadding where they discussed these events during the Russian Revolution and against the Tsar by Jews. Indeed, there is any amount of evidence that in numberless cases, this change of names or adoption of cover names, as the Jewish description is for the purposes of concealment. There's another article, I'll link a more recent one from 2008, from a Jewish source, the Jewish Forward, titled, How Did the Jews Choose Their Last Names? And I'm not going to read anything from this, really. It essentially corroborates what the International Jew had to say about it, that as far as it being a recent thing, it gives a little bit more specific details on other countries and other dates for these things. And of course, it paints it as sort of an anti-Jewish thing, too, that the European governments forced the Jews to do this. Although, you know, reading what is literally written, they forced them to be like everybody else, which was the whole premise of Jewish emancipation, was that the Jews would be treated like any other citizen of a country. And of course, many Jews aren't happy at all with being treated as equals. They demand to be treated as special. Why would anyone who's powerful or famous change their name? Oftentimes it happens before they become powerful or famous that they change their names. But the motive, I think, the common motive, is to help them, right? It's not to help the people around them, really. It's to help them, and they change it with that conscious end in mind. And there are many many individual examples that I could cite, and I'll cite a few here that you may not have even known. In fact, celebrities, when it comes to entertainment, are some of the most common ones that change their names for the purpose of posing as non-Jews and being more popular than appealing to a broader audience. One is Tony Curtis, whose Jewish name was Bernard Schwartz. When he died in 2010, there was an article by Daniel Barron, who writes under the name Hollywood Jew, at the Jewish Journal, about Tony Curtis's Jewish identity. The title is Tony Curtis, Jewish Movie Star, Dies at 85. Now, how many people think of Tony Curtis as a Jewish movie star? Well, apparently Jews think of him that way, but because he's named Tony Curtis, most people don't think of him as a Jew. But there were incidents related in this article where his Jewish identity was a very strong identity as a Jew, and he felt very sensitive to his Jewishness. Barron writes, there have been many Jewish movie stars. There have been Jewish movie stars before Curtis, from Emanuel Goldberg, whose name was Edward G. Robinson, to Isser Danielovich, whose name was Kirk Douglas, adopted name Kirk Douglas. But none of them sounded like Bernie Schwartz, who, even after he changed his name, was unmistakably a Jewish street kid from the east side of Manhattan. She's talking about his voice and his accent that he couldn't change. That wasn't really a New York accent. It was a Jewish accent. It's no coincidence that the one line of Curtis's that everybody knows is, "Yonder lies the castle of my father." A silly phrase given an ethnic mangling, it seems to encapsulate his whole career and persona. For a Jew, it does. It also caused some bit of scandal, at least in Curtis's mind. The line became notorious, Curtis says. It didn't become notorious until Debbie Reynolds made fun of it on a talk show. And it quotes her saying, "Did you see that new guy in the movies? They call him Tony Curtis, but that's not his real name. In his new movie, he's got a hilarious line where he says, 'Yonder lies the castle of my father.'" You could chalk up her ridicule to my New York accent, writes Curtis, "but when she mentioned the issue of my real name on television, I began to wonder if there was something anti-Semitic going on there." Now, this is interesting. Outing a Jew who's trying to pass, who's trying to perpetrate fraud, is characterized by Jews, of course, as anti-Semitism, as something that's bad for the Jews. It's not them that's doing anything wrong in their minds. You're the one doing something wrong by calling attention to the fact that they're actually, they've changed their names, they're posing as somebody that they're not. The rest of the story, and the story as a whole, basically, is about it's a sob story of this an implausible sob story about how Tony Curtis, the big movie star, was actually bullied and victimized as a Jew in Jew-run Hollywood. Another article I'll cite is titled "David Copperfield's Magical Relationship with God and Judaism" from the Jewish Forward. It's interesting how many of these articles come from Jewish publications where they're basically telling Jews, "Hey, did you realize this guy is a Jew?" And they talk about how strong their identities are, and this is no different. Born David Seth Kotkin, the son of middle-class parents in Metuchen, New Jersey, Copperfield sees a direct link, indeed a historical connection, between being Jewish and achieving the most stunning and unlikely feats. "Being Jewish is all about picking yourself up by your bootstraps," he told the Forward. "When people are beating you down and throwing you out, you dust yourself off and make the best of it. That's the Jewish upbringing. And magic is about taking adversity and changing it into a smile, taking the no's and turning them into yeses. Magic is about making people dream." Copperfield attended Hebrew school, became a bar mitzvah, and to this day honors his roots. "It's an important part of who he is, for better or worse," he added. "I have a personal relationship with God and I pray a lot. My kids go to Hebrew school." Well, it can't be all that important because he doesn't wear it on his sleeve. He changed his name to hide that he's a Jew, and here he is in a Jewish publication telling him how important it is. But I would say that this demonstrates basically the fraud that I've been talking about. It also demonstrates Jewish networking and this tribal nepotism, as illustrated by this being posted by the Forward, this boosterism of one of their own. And magic is about dreams is ridiculous. Magic is about illusion. It's about duping and tricking people. Sleight of hand, which a lot of magic is consists of, is related to what other Jews do, which is the turn of phrase, their verbal skills that they use to misdirect and manipulate people. You could say about magicians that they're more honest about it and that they're actually people are paying to be tricked and duped. That's how they're being tricked and duped out of their money, is that they think that they're being entertained. On the emotionally charged topic of name changing, Copperfield said that he initially planned to be an actor, and he didn't think Kotkin was a good actor name. but he thought Copperfield would be a better name. And he said if he had to do it all over again, he might not pick Copperfield because he now views Charles Dickens as anti-Semitic. Well, this I looked a little bit into Dickens and anti-Semitism, and apparently one of the characters in Oliver Twist was Fagin, one of the major characters, and he was a thief. He was a bad character, and he was clearly identified as a Jew. And this is anti-Semitism, and it's amazing, really, that something so distant in time and in space and something seemingly minor and even repudiated later by Dickens himself would still be enough to offend David Copperfield, who adopted the name Copperfield from Dickens. It offends his Jewish identity. That's how strong his Jewish identity is, or how strong he wants us to believe it is. Emotionally charged topic is right. This issue of names and being outed as a Jew. In May of this year, there was a bit of an exchange in the celebrity news between Jon Stewart and Donald Trump. And it's actually been a long running thing where Jon Stewart's been sniping at Donald Trump, ridiculing him, mocking him, and so forth. And this particular incident started with Stewart tweeting something. I think it was a tweet. He said, "By the way, did you know Donald Trump's birth name is Fuckface Von Clownstick?" Now, he was, you know, it's because Trump has been giving Obama a lot of grief about his birth certificate. And so that was Stewart trying to ridicule Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump came back and said, "What's funny about the name Fuckface Von Clownstick? It was not coined by John Leibowitz. He stole it from some moron on Twitter." Well, this created a shitstorm, a little mini shitstorm, really. But it was the titles of articles written were, you know, Donald Trump is an anti-Semite, or, you know, they made a big deal out of it. And one in particular I can pull out here is Elspeth Reeve at the Atlantic Wire. "Donald Trump outs Jon Stewart as a Jew. The whole punchline of Trump's tweet is that Stewart is Jewish." Well, no, that's her point, really, that Leibowitz, to her, is obviously Jewish, and that's the point that she thinks that Trump was trying to make. I think the point that Trump was actually trying to make is that Leibowitz is a hypocrite because he's the one who's changed his birth name. He's the one who's hiding behind a different name that's not really his own. There's an article from Slate written by Ron Rosenbaum, and I've talked about him before. He's one of these professional Jews. He wears his Jewishness on his sleeve. He talks about Jewish issues from an unapologetic 150% Jewish point of view all the time. He's a hyper-Jew. And he wrote an article titled, "Should Jon Stewart Change His Name Back to John Leibowitz?" back in 2009. And he made the same point, basically, that Trump made in a longer form, in an open letter form to John Leibowitz, that starts out praising Leibowitz, the typical tribal promotion, ethnic nepotism. But then he says, "On a more serious note, it would represent the end of a shabby, antiquated era. Pronouncing that aspect of anti-Semitism, you know, the fact that Jews change their names, that's anti-Semitism. It's not their fault. It's everybody else's fault. Now hopefully dead and gone. It might even make it easier for young comedians, actors, and rock stars, Jews, of course, to resist the temptation to try to, quote-unquote, pass. It could be an important cultural moment. Don't you think it's about time for Jews to reject the rejection of their ancestry and the waspification of their names? Not just you, but all Jews in show business. Indeed, all Jews in business. Lots of stuff in this article. It's incredible, really. It hits a lot of the same points that I'm going to make by citing other sources, and he makes it all in one, the passing and so forth, anti-Semitism. "I will admit I have a personal interest in this matter since I have a recognizably Jewish name," he says. There's that theme again of that certain names are recognizably Jewish, like Rosenbaum. And he tells a story about his mother and his father, and he says about his mother having to change her name. She had to change her name to get a job. she couldn't get a job during the Depression. Well, duh, it was the Depression. Lots of people had trouble. But because she's a Jew, it was because of anti-Semitism. So she changed her name from Morgenstern to Morningstar. And no, it wasn't Dachau-style anti-Semitism she was reacting to. It was more gentleman's agreement-style country club anti-Semitism. But there was something ugly about the necessity of the change nonetheless. Well, it wasn't necessary. She didn't have to change her name if she didn't want to. But she did want to because she thought it would be better for her if she did. Later in the article, Rosenbaum writes, and yet there is, still is, John Stewart, a faint but unnecessary relic of anti-Semitism. You know, John, the treatment of Jewish names is often a barometer of that social disease. Well, that's a different way of saying what Kevin MacDonald said about how Jews will often go into Crypsis mode to hide, and then once they feel that they don't need to hide anymore, they come out of it. And they're still Jews, and they've kept their Jewishness bottled up and to themselves for a while. They've hidden it for a while. Of course, Rosenbaum blames anti-Semites for doing that, even though it's Jews that benefit from doing it and do it specifically to benefit. Now, you have every right to wonder why I'm singling you out like this. I think it has something to do with what I like most about your show, which is that you, like the best satirists, focus on making fun of those who put up a false front. This is very, very interesting, this point that he makes. Not that Stewart is false or malign in any sense, blah, 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 blah. But that's that it's kind of a mask. You spend most of your time making fun of the pretentious masks that politicians, celebrities, and big shots adopt. You're all three, a politician, a celebrity, and a big shot, in the sense that you have a remarkable influence politically. Yes, he does. And that's amazing for somebody who's pretty much a comedian, really. John Leibowitz, John Stewart, has that kind of influence. But he does. And he changed his name in order to help get that influence. And here's Rosenbaum in 2009 calling him on his own hypocrisy, that he likes to puncture other people's pretentious masks, but he wears one himself. And that's exactly what Trump had to say. And it's another illustration of how when a Jew does something, it's not anti-Semitism. It's good for he's arguing what's good for the Jews, as Rosenbaum is. And when Donald Trump says pretty much the same thing, makes the same point, that's anti-Semitism, that's bad for the Jews. And it's the same thing. It's just the point of view that makes it anti-Semitism or not anti-Semitism. There's another article, I think it's very critical, written by a Jewish woman titled The Name Game. Again, printed in the Jewish Journal, another Jewish source. And it's a bit of a confession as to how important this name thing is, although she couches it as in comedy and joking about it. But it hits a nerve with her. Her name is Teresa Strasser, and she doesn't think that that's a very Jewish name. When we were little, my brother and I realized that whenever we asked someone if someone was Jewish, my mother would answer by simply repeating their name as if that said it all. Irving Fishbaum? Ira and Esther Lefkowitz? Come on. That's her mother, and she's relating there. If Jewish names are on a scale of 1 to Hadassah Lieberman, mine may be a 1. And that's really what the point of her article here is her insecurity. She acknowledges the importance of these names and her insecurity as a Jew, as a Jewess, that her name isn't Jewish enough for her. And she's having a change of heart on this whole issue. When I was 20, an editor at a Jewish newspaper, I wonder how she got that job if she didn't somehow convince somebody that she was Jewish. A Jewish newspaper editor walked up to my desk on the first day of work, didn't introduce himself, didn't shake my hand, just looked at me and asked, "What's a Jew doing with a name like Teresa?" I told him he could call me Rachel if it would make him feel better. Until recently, I've always appreciated having an ambiguous name. It's nice to reveal your ethnicity only when you feel like it, when it feels safe, when it's your choice. See, this is about the benefits to Jews of passing, of hiding behind a name that's not identifiably Jewish by pretending not to be a Jew. As an adult, I've always planned to keep my last name if I got married, but I still play the dating name game, taking surnames out for a spin. Teresa Cohen, Teresa Goldstein. I still enjoy the sheer unabashed waspiness of Teresa Tyler or the incredible misdirect of a Teresa Puccinelli, but I no longer cringe from Teresa Saperstein. Here's the money quote from the article. As a Jew, your name identifies you. I never wanted to run from that. And that's a lie. The whole article is about how she spent her life kind of liking that she wasn't identifiably Jewish. But I welcome the option to pass. Now I wonder what it would be like to remove all doubt. Quote, I'm Teresa Blumenfeld. Nice to meet you. Yeah, Blumenfeld. And that's what this is. This is a fantasy of hers that she's writing out. She's having out loud these thoughts that she's having out loud. When you look her up on Wikipedia, she's a mild celebrity. And she eventually married Daniel Wachinski, an IBM accountant. So I would guess that she found a Jewish spouse for herself. What are the chances? Another very interesting article on this issue is about how it's titled French Jews Win the Right to Choose Their Own Names. This is in Times of Israel, and it's talking about a recent development in France, apparently, that after decades of denying Jews the right to change their French last names to their original Jewish ones, the French Ministry of Justice recently revised its position. What happened is that in the 40s and the 50s, in the wake of the war, Jews were moving into France from other places, and the government at the time urged them to adopt French-sounding names. Didn't force them to, just said, hey, it might be a good idea if you do. And part of the laws that they passed either then or along the way was, once you change your name, let's stop playing the games and let's just keep that name. You can't go back. And so, of course, Jews are upset about this. They want to be able to do whatever they want. And so there's this article is about a Jewish organization titled La Force du Nom, the strength of the name. And its founder is a woman named Masson, Caroline Masson. That's her French surname. She's a lecturer in psychoanalysis. A couple of things here. The article talks about how Holocaust survivors want to reconnect with their roots and taking back their names of their ancestors. Well, we already know Jewish names don't have a long history. There's not much sentimental value attached to them. Jews just are making up that sob story because what's really important to Jews is that they be able to be treated specially, that they get their way. See, these laws about changing your names, the encouragement was for everybody. It wasn't just aimed at Jews, and it doesn't just restrict Jews. And in fact, if you read the article closely, you can see that Jews actually are being exempted from the law. And that's the reality, is that on a case-by-case basis, Jews are allowed to change their names back to whatever they want. But the way this article is written, it's some sort of injustice done to Jews. Now, let me conclude here by saying that names are one of the more outwardly visible and important indications of a person's identity. Certain names by themselves are enough to identify Jews. Jews are aware of this. They know what the names are, and they often change those names to disguise themselves. They give other Jews grief about this. They give each other grief. They give non-Jews who notice grief about it. It's calculated to benefit them. It helps them disguise who they are. It's one of the more common ways they go about fooling whites into thinking that they are us, so that they can tell us what's good, what's bad, what we should do, what we shouldn't do. It's part of their crypsis.